Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Adam Jones is leading the sports cycle today because fans dropped expletives on him at Fenway Park. So we get into this debate about what are fans allowed to say, what are fans allowed to do when they go to a sporting event. And this is one of those that I just don't really see the whole point of debating this. It's unacceptable. And freedom of speech, that's unacceptable in a public place. This is what keeps people away from going to sporting events. The erosion of going to games, because you never know who it is you're going to sit next to or who's going to be there coming up alongside of you that you're paying your hard-earned bucks for. And I don't think that most people believe that having a racial epithet thrown at someone from the bleachers is acceptable behavior. I just find that really hard to believe. So that is on my mind today, one of the many things. We've got a good guest lineup today. Dennis Dodd is going to be with us. So here in the Valley, because we are the busiest sports market in America, today at the Biltmore, and actually this week at the Biltmore, it is the Fiesta Week. They call it the Summit. They used to call it the Frolic. But coaches from around the country, college coaches, come rolling through. Like, the epicenter of college football is at the Biltmore here in the Valley this week. You want to go meet a coach? I don't know if security is going to let you close enough, but they're going to be everywhere. And so there's some things in college football I want to talk to Dennis Dodd about. It may involve the layoffs over at ESPN. There's some new news on that front, because it does impact you as the consumer as to what you take in and the content coming out. We'll talk to Dennis Dodd. Jordan Simone is going to be with us. And Jordan was off the radar. Like, I'd totally forgotten about Jordan Simone and his injury. And then on draft day, second day of the draft, actually, on Twitter, it came out from Jordan Simone that he was going to sign a contract with the Seattle Seahawks. When we last remember Jordan Simone, he was at Arizona State, was a fine football player. Eric, he was never going to be a first round or second round pick.
No, he was not.
He was probably going to be a late round but likely free agent to begin with.
Yes.
And then he gets hurt.
Tore his ACL his senior season.
Tore his ACL. Fans rallied around him. And then we just forgot about him. Like, had you forgotten about Jordan Simone, or had you been keeping an eye on that one?
Just on social media, I knew he'd been rehabbing pretty hard. And the bad break, I mean, it's never good to tear an ACL, but he tore it so late in the season 2 years ago. I think it was in, like, game...
It was before the U of A game.
Yeah, but it was still... It was past the halfway point of the season.
Right. So it wiped out this
year. And it just completely wiped out any sort of draft prospects. But credit to him.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know if he's going to make the Seahawks. The chances are... Yeah, it's really stacked against him. But I like the fact of somebody going after it and sticking with it right here in our own backyard. I really like that story. And I would say, if you're... When I hear people say that person was a great Wildcat, that person was a great Sun Devil, Jordan Simone is pretty much everything you would want in a college athlete. He's a very good student, and so he's going to continue on with it. So we'll have Jordan Simone and Dennis Dodd with us on the show today. Dennis, in about 10 minutes, we'll talk some college football. I'm going to be focused this week quite a bit on the Diamondbacks, because this is a week where they're going to get a litmus test. They had it over the weekend, except Colorado was here at home. And Fernando Rodney came in with a gas can in the matches, and we know what happened. And the Diamondbacks ended up dropping 2 of 3 to Colorado. What would have been a spectacular April ended with a little bit of a thud, I thought, because you had Rodney blow a couple games at the end of the month, which leaves you wondering, where is the organization going to go to find a closer? To be sitting here a half game out of first place as they open a series tonight at Washington. Washington has one of the best players on the planet in Bryce Harper. Washington has one of the deepest lineups if you look around position by position. Their starting pitching is really good. Their bullpen is a bit of a concern. Mike Rizzo, who I know well from his time with the Diamondbacks, is doing a nice job there of running that franchise. And then you have Dusty Baker. So this, for the Diamondbacks to be back there for 3 games today, I've not seen the weather. I don't know if the weather is going to be a factor or not. whenever you go there, you have to look at that. And then the team goes to Colorado, the team that is in front of them. And whenever you play at Coors Field, that place is a bandbox. That place plays differently. Pitchers get beat up in a hurry. Taiwan Walker throws tonight. He struck out 11 his last time out. There's a lot there that I like. Come off a road trip. Go on a road trip, rather. Maybe for Rodney, it's getting out of Arizona. I don't know. I'm pretty much to the point of I'm beyond 50% done with him. I know finding closers is tough. I get it. It's 26 games in. I also get it. Closers blow games. But if you look at who is closing for the Dodgers and Kenley Jansen, and you look at the amount of dollars that was put into Mark Melancon up at San Francisco, even though they're not good right now, if you look at the Achilles heel of the Diamondbacks, right now it is down as the guy coming out of the swinging gate. Even though there are people that will say, well, he had such a great, great percentage in the month of April. I mean, he came in, he saved most of his games. No, his ERA was north of 10. So for him to just be able to get through as he did, it's an adventure when he comes out on the mound. And it's going to be a seismic shift. Like tomorrow we'll have Pedro with us. It'll be good to talk to Pedro about it. But tonight, if they're in a close game, at what point does Torrey Lovello say, Archie, get up and warm up? And when that moment comes, I think that's the end of Fernando Rodney. I don't get the feeling that he's a guy that can go down the line and come in the eighth inning with two on and two out against a right-handed batter and just get one guy. I could be wrong on that. So that's going on. The NBA playoffs last night, I to see Houston just destroy San Antonio. And there's Mike D'Antoni that is there that's coaching. And I'm a big fan of Mike's. I think he made an enormous mistake of leaving Phoenix and going to New York City. I think that he was pressured by family to go back there. Mainly his wife wanted to be in New York. Laurel liked the whole shopping thing, liked being on television and all that. I saw that when I was at Channel 3. He gave up a great opportunity here. I also think Robert Sarver kind of lost his mind, went crazy, and decided bringing Shaquille O'Neal here would be a really good idea to put alongside of Mike D'Antoni's run-and-gun, fun type of style. Also, the age, it started to creep in with Steve Nash, Grant Hill, Amari's knees, so on and so forth. We had a great run here with Mike D'Antoni, so I would like to see him do well. His last couple of stops have not been good at all. The Lakers was a disaster. You look at what happened in New York City. It was a bad fit. Now he's down in Houston. And they just destroyed San Antonio on the road last night, went to San Antonio and just chewed them up and spit them out. And I get it. Some of you Suns fans, anytime you can get over on San Antonio without your team being involved, because your team's never involved in the playoffs. The Rockets buried 22 three-pointers last night. And, you know, they look like the younger, fresher team. Even though the Spurs had a break, there's something about San Antonio where you just expect them to hit that wall. Like, they were pushed up against it, against Memphis. They were pushed and pushed hard. You look at Cleveland on the other side. People were expecting Cleveland. NBA observers were expecting Cleveland to be pushed hard in these playoffs. And so far, it's been a total coast. It goes back to what I've said back in January, February, March. You can throw stuff out there about are there problems in Cleveland? Is LeBron logging too many minutes? Is Kyrie the guy he needs to be? We got a player here dating a Kardashian. Then Tristan Thompson dumps Kardashian. LeBron grabs a beer. I mean, last night was just kind of like, we got Toronto here. What is this? This isn't going to be a challenge. So while there's this narrative around the Cavaliers of minutes and law, that's just filling time. It's filling time to Warriors, Cavaliers. Anything short of that would be a monumental upset. But I do think back to San Antonio, looking at Houston, and I could be dead flat wrong in this, but I don't think I am. A, Mike D'Antoni has come in and done a great job. B, it shows that Dwight Howard, you just don't want Dwight Howard on your team. Dwight Howard just clogs up the lane. Dwight Howard is not a winner. He's just not. They got Dwight Howard out of there last year, and what's going on in Houston? They've got to turn around, and they look pretty darn good. Like, the Suns are going to have some decisions to make about getting out of the basement. I think they're closer to doing that. I do. 2 weeks from today will be a monumental day if you are a Suns fan. 2 weeks from today is the lottery. If 2 weeks from today the Suns get the first overall pick in the NBA draft lottery, it should change the direction of this franchise for years and years to come. If they get the second pick in this draft lottery, it should still change because there's two guys there at the top. If they get the fourth or fifth, then we probably need to go get chicken bones and rub them together and have a burial out in front of the arena. We need to do something to break the curse. This franchise, then you would have to say, they're just flat cursed. And so I'm watching the playoffs in the Western Conference right now. Tonight, I'm really interested to see how Utah does against Golden State. Nobody's giving Utah a chance. Utah's uniforms look like they're bought at a swap meet at Apache Junction. They don't look good. Their warm-ups look even worse than that. Now, the Washington-Boston series on the other side, because Isaiah Thomas was here, and because we let him go here in Phoenix for a bag of rocks, yeah, I said we. And he's playing at an MVP type. He's not a top three MVP candidate, but he's certainly in the top 10 with how well he's played. And of course, we decide it's just not in our best interest to have him here. Go figure. And then you have Washington on the other side. And I got to watch Markieff Morris put up numbers in the playoffs that are really good numbers. He's done a nice job in the playoffs. I have to watch Gortat put up numbers in the playoffs that are nice numbers. Meantime, we're here with Alex Len, who was a top five pick, who's a nice enough guy, who's not showing anywhere as close to being a top five pick. I didn't want Markieff here. You didn't want Markieff here, but they drafted Markieff here. So it's another blown shot by the hometown heroes on the basketball front. It's a serious story that I was having a business breakfast yesterday morning. The guy that I was talking to, we were sitting there and Todd Heap's name came up. This person knows Todd Heap well. And I just said, man, that one really hit hard because we've been doing stuff here with Todd. And he said, yeah, they're doing something around the daughter who passed away on Wednesday of this week because it would have been her birthday. And I just kind of got a lump in my throat. So I found out what that event is. I've put it on my Facebook page. I put it on Twitter, but I'm going to talk about that for a minute, a little bit later on in the show. It's going to be heavy, but I do think the Todd Heap story is just one of those that nobody, anybody at all. Nah, I don't want to hear about that. I just want my sports. I just want to talk about Adam Jones having racial epithets thrown at him from the outfield in Boston and how that is okay, Brad, or how it's not okay. Really? I think we all know that's just not right. But up next, college football. We'll head out to the Biltmore. Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, national college football writer in town. All the college football coaches of substance are here in the Valley at the Biltmore. And it's the big Fiesta event that's going on, the Fiesta Summit. If you're a college football fan, you'll get into this. That's on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. And the busiest sports market in America never stops. Now out to the Biltmore, where it was the NFL owners meetings last month. This month, it's the summit. All the college football powers in the Pac-12, Big 12, other conferences will be rolling through. I was talking to some of the people at the Fiesta Bowl this morning, and they said, we're just going to be locked down there this week. Dennis Dodd joins us now, CBS Sports national college football writer, with the backdrop being the Biltmore. Are we expecting a lot of news out of these meetings this week, Dennis?
Not really. These are regularly scheduled meetings. They happen every year. It used to be titled the Fiesta Frolic. Now it's the Fiesta Summit since the Fiesta Bowl scandal. And there's much more work that goes on than play, I would venture to say. Last year, if you remember, this thing was all about Big 12 expansion.
Right.
And there was a lot of news. There was a lot of stuff going on. Ultimately, nothing happened. But these are regularly scheduled meetings, and there aren't really a huge amount of bullet items on the agenda.
Let's go down the list of some things that I see. You may disagree, or you think there's others. But
yeah.
So ESPN last week lays off 100 people in our industry, which is obviously tragic news. They've signed this big contract that they're tied in with the college football championship. They play these games on New Year's Eve when people are out. Is there a push to get that changed, Big View, on the semifinals?
Well, they have changed it. They changed it more than a year ago to get off of New Year's Eve when it falls on a weekday or weeknight. So they're not doing that anymore. I think New Year's Eve is on a Saturday last year. So they've gotten rid of that. I don't know if there's a tie between that per se and laying off 100 individuals. I think the tie there is that ESPN is going to owe all these entities a lot of money, a lot more money than we can even talk about now, because all these deals are backloaded. So for them and really the industry, I think it's going to get worse.
Mm. In terms of college football, and I am going down the path of what happened last week, because ESPN is a big college football player.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a correlation there of laying off people that are very good in the college space, whether it be football or basketball, and the future and those rights fees coming up, that colleges need to look at that from your view and say, where are we heading as a college industry?
I think journalism has to ask that question. Everybody right now is getting paid. The rights fees for these colleges are going through the roof. And I'm not just talking about television. IMG and Learfield control the marketing aspect of it and the radio rights. They're tied up with some of the biggest deals, biggest schools in the country. So as far as, I guess, what you'd call peak oil, where we start to go back on the downside and start to run out of this money,
mm-hmm.
we haven't hit there yet. And I don't know if we will anytime soon, because the cord cutters, Netflix, et cetera, who I think a lot of us speculate will get involved one day, have not yet. So that may sustain the model even into the next decade.
The draft was last week, of course, and from your view, I'm curious, you see college football during the regular season. When draft day comes around, do you look at it to kind of tilt your head and say, that player should have been viewed much higher as a pro prospect or much lower?
Yeah, every year. I particularly get worked up about the quarterback situation, where all we hear every year is how these quarterbacks, at least to me, how these quarterbacks arrive, quote-unquote, unprepared, because they play in spread option offenses. And I think it's disingenuous. I think it's hypocritical. It's what football is today. You hear that, particularly from Bruce Arians, by the way. He's been the most outspoken critic. And then the first five quarterbacks taken in the draft come from spread offenses, even to the point that, right or wrong, the Bears leverage their future on a Mitchell Trubisky who started 13 games. So we can view that in the space of this being an average draft, but a quarterback is still a quarterback. And I'm working on a piece right now where Mike Leach, who's one of the fathers of the spread option offense, calls this mentality stupid. You know, you can't out of one side of your mouth say, well, these guys don't get under center. They can't call plays. And then you go draft them. This is what the game is today. Most of the overwhelming majority are spread option offenses. Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston are doing okay. They were two of the back to back Heisman winners and went high in the draft. So that seems to have worked out okay.
We're talking with Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports national college football writer. That said, if we're looking ahead a year from now, a quarterback at Wyoming is already getting a lot of run. You have Sam Darnold. You have Josh Rosen potential. I mean, the players, Josh Allen at Wyoming, tell me about what the buzz is on him.
Just ran into Craig Bohl yesterday, the Wyoming coach out at the Biltmore. And I go, dude, what's up? You know, I see this guy. Tell me about him. So I didn't know anything about him. Small town kid from, I believe this is right, Fireball, California. Can't
love
make
that.
This up. Went to JUCO, starred there, wanted to go to Fresno. They didn't show any interest. Shows up at Wyoming. It's kind of this strapping country boy who drives a broken down pickup. And so now you're saying, no, this can't be right. Track down a guy who intercepted one of his passes last year, San Diego State. At the three, caused him to fumble out of the end zone, so made up for his own turnover, returns to the sideline, blood all over his face. You know, he'd been cut up from tackling. And he's like, you know, Johnny Football. I'm not saying he's Johnny Manziel. I'm just saying he's like an All-American kid. Can throw it a mile, great arm. I did notice only 56% completion rate. That can improve, probably will improve when he gets, you know, gets around better players. But this is a kid who may, is the next Carson Wentz, would, as it stands right now, will be the first or second quarterback off the board next year.
The other one would be Sam Darnold, right?
Yes. Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, and after I just went on that rant about spread option quarterbacks, I just named three quarterbacks who play in pro-style offenses, and that's the way it will be next year. Sam Darnold, if nothing happens negatively, will be the number one quarterback. You're right, Josh Allen, and then Josh Rosen in some order.
Dennis Dodd with a CBS Sports National College Football writer in town at the Biltmore for the summit. Lots of conferences in town, Fiesta Bowl out there as well. Todd Graham, Rich Rodriguez, to say that it is a big year for them would be the understatement of this interview and probably the year, correct? Or are they both in spaces where, boy, the administration, even though Greg Byrne's not at U of A anymore and Ray Anderson's up here, that they feel like these two guys are the ones to get the job done. What's your view on both programs, Dennis?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think they're hot seat guys. You know, you go 3-9 and lose your AD who hired you. I think that's more than fair. You know, same for Todd Graham. They need to get better, you know, in a league that is getting better and better, the Pac-12. You know, Arizona remains that team that isn't that has never been to the Rose Bowl, obviously. And I don't know if the prospects are that good for either team this year. So, yeah, absolutely.
What is it about these two coaches or programs? Is it a mirage in Arizona, the state of, that these two programs, people say, it's beautiful, you have this big enrollment, you should win in Tempe and Tucson, you have this college community, the basketball team wins, the football team should be able to do it. Is it just a mirage in this state?
I think the draft kind of reflected what's going on right now. I think the only player taken from the state was the Arizona State kicker. Zane, help me with his last
name. Zane Gonzalez, right.
Gonzalez, of course. Yeah. Really good kicker. And that was it. Now, in a Sun Belt state where you've got a population base of whatever Phoenix is, 4 million, I don't know what it is, you got to do better than that. With proximity to California, to Texas, you've got to do better than that. That doesn't make sense.
And lastly on this, for the conference, the Pac-12 and in the Pac-12 South, as we sit here in May, it's USC and the rest of the Pac-12 South, or do you see it pretty evened out this coming year?
I have USC in my top five. It's on the site right now. I think they're back. I think they're back in a big way. They've got holes defensively and at receiver. But when you've got a guy that can that spin it like Darnold, and a leader like him, I think you can go a long way. Yes, it is USC and everybody else in the South, and probably USC is the best team in the Pac-12. I don't see Washington duplicating what they did last year. USC doesn't have to play Washington, which is probably a plus for the loser for both teams. Clay Helton has now become, can this guy coach? Can this guy coach USC to a national championship? And I'm meeting with him here in a few minutes, and that's what I'm going to ask him about. He'd much rather be in that position than what he was last year.
Dennis, appreciate the time and the visit. Enjoy your time at the Biltmore. Thanks.
All right, thanks so much.
Dennis Dodd, always good to catch up with Dennis, CBS Sports National College Football writer, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So the story last night in Boston, if you didn't hear, Adam Jones, outfielder for the Baltimore Orioles, said that he had racial slurs thrown his direction. And so Major League Baseball today has come out, the racist taunts that he faced last night, the targets of abuse that he faced last night. Jones said afterwards, a disrespectful fan threw a bag of peanuts at me. He also said that I was called the N-word a handful of times tonight. Thanks. Pretty awesome. End quote. So, I don't know, Eric, when we're out at sporting events, and back in the day, I will be completely transparent on this, I would sit in press boxes year after year after year and watch baseball games. Last year, I might have sat in the press box two or three times, but I went to probably 10 Diamondback games last year. And And so I, as a fan, took my son. That's what you do. You want to take your son out. You want to take your kids out, take your wife out, whatever. And most of those games, I didn't have anything going on that I would think was any more than just some fun. However, a couple games, it was the idiot sitting behind me or next to me that just felt as though they had the right to say or do anything. And when you see something like this, and baseball today has to send out this big apology and how this just cannot happen. How do you police that, first and foremost? You don't, right? I mean,
no, there's no way you can.
A bag of peanuts being thrown from the stands. It's a Monday night. It's the Orioles and Red Sox. I'm going to get hammered and I'm going to throw something out at a player.
You would be more apt, at least from my personal experience, to see something like this happen in a football game than a baseball game. Because the football games are usually far more intense than baseball games, and they're not as frequent as baseball games. And you get tailgating is so much more popular in football that you get people that are inebriated that come into stadiums and then continue to drink and say things that are completely inappropriate, completely out of line. I know a lot of parents that won't go to NFL games anymore because the language is too abusive for their kids to hear.
Oh, these kids need to toughen up. Hey, man, I paid my money.
I'm not a parent, so I'm not one to judge as to what parents want to do. They can do whatever they want, but that's a pretty sad state when...
No, you're right.
Yeah, we can't take my 10-year-old to a Cardinal game because the people behind me are drunk and screaming obscenities and sometimes racial slurs.
Okay, but here's... Let me drill on this because it's interesting. So Jones is just one of 62 African-American players on opening day rosters of the league's 30 teams this year. And he was the target of further taunts as the game continued. I'm going through this, and I hear slurs directed towards people of certain faiths and denominations. I've not heard skin color at a baseball game. I haven't. Jones said he heard there were about 60 ejections in the ballpark Monday night. 60. That seems like a lot. The Red Sox said the number was closer to 30.
Still seems like a lot.
That still seems like a lot
30
of 30
ejections in a baseball game.
Oh, but we're passionate, man. We know the game.
That's 10 an hour, Brad.
We know the game, man. We're passionate. We win.
The person that could really speak on this is Pedro Gomez because he sits in more baseball stadiums than anybody I know.
So the president of the Red Sox issued an apology to Jones on Tuesday morning, said the team was looking into the incidents. The Red Sox want to publicly apologize to Adam Jones, the entire Orioles organization, for what occurred at Fenway Park on Monday night. How many times have things happened where players didn't say anything?
Probably more than we know.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure of that. No player should have an object thrown at him on the playing field, nor be subjected to any kind of racism at Fenway Park. The governor of Massachusetts and the mayor of Boston condemned the fans. The governor weighed in this morning. The mayor weighed in this morning. Fenway fans' behavior at Red Sox game last night was unacceptable and shameful. It's not what Boston, what Massachusetts and Boston are about. That was from the governor. Mayor said, this is unacceptable and not who we are as a city. These words and actions have no place in Fenway, Boston, or anywhere. We are better than this. You know where I heard a lot of abuse, just verbal abuse, was when I was doing Mercury games. Now, you guys may kind of just tilt your head to the side. Like, going to a Cardinal game and seeing fans get in fights in the stands because the Raiders are playing the Cardinals, that's just kind of going to happen. Cowboy fans are playing Cardinal fans. It's the NFL. That nonsense is going to happen. Was it worse at Sun Devil Stadium? You know, I don't go to Cardinal games with my family. I have never asked the Cardinals for tickets to go to a game, ever, not once. And so I can't speak to that. I've been invited as guests to go sit in suites, and that's a different experience. I can't relate to what it's like behind the goalposts. Nor do I really want to. I see enough cell phone video. I've talked to enough security guards that do know what's going on, or people that say this happened and that happened. They're almost surprised, like, really? Yeah, shocking. That doesn't mean that there aren't idiots that show up at Suns games. I very seldom see things with the Coyotes because when they play the Red Wings, it's like 90% Red Wing fans.
Or the Blackhawks.
Or the Blackhawks, yeah, for that matter.
Easy for me to say.
No, but when you go to a Coyote game, do you see brawls in the stands?
Never. Never.
So I'm not excusing what happened last night in Boston. I am just merely pointing out that when you go to sporting events, it seems as though decorum just kind of gets thrown off to the side. It's kind of like the idiot at a movie theater that wants to answer their phone while the movie is going on because, well, it's my phone and it's my time, so why shouldn't I do it? Or the person sitting next to me in the doctor's office who's talking about, yeah, I think my husband is a real load, and I don't know why I'm married to him, and yeah, we're really struggling financially, and like, really? Do you just have no idea? You have no idea where you are right now. The people in the grocery store, they're talking about their checking account balance on their cell phone while I'm trying to buy bananas. So it's just as though people want to just go out and just do their thing. We should not have to conform. I mean, it's really discouraging when the mayor and the governor of a state have to take time to address what sounds to be a bunch of people that were just flat idiots, drunk, whatever it was. I'm already getting notes. Oh, you're being too hard on these people. No, I'm not. I'm really disappointed in that.
When I first saw this, Brad, on the crawl this morning, I just caught the tail end of it. And when it said Adam Jones, I immediately thought it was Pac-Man Jones. That's the first.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, Pac-Man Jones. Wow, that's not really surprising coming from a guy like that, but.
The people would be yelling.
This is not a funny situation. That was just sort of.
No.
That's the first thing I thought of.
No.
Guy with a lot of baggage.
And then I want to get over here to this this last story before this segment, and that is Todd Heap. So Todd Heap, we know what happened last month. The accident happened on the 14th with his daughter in their driveway, and she passed away. And it's been something that's really torn apart. I think what do you say? What do you do on that one? So Todd Heap, yesterday morning, having a breakfast, business breakfast. The person I was sitting across from said, yeah, there's the Hugs from Holly event coming up. I'm like, Hugs from Holly. And it really connect to me. What's Hugs from Holly? I put on my Facebook page. I put it on Twitter too. Hugsfromholly.com. Tomorrow would have been Todd Heap's daughter's fourth birthday, I'm sorry. Hugs for Holly. This page has pictures of Todd Heap holding his daughter. Holly was known to give the best hugs, and her love for everyone and everything in life was contagious. Can you pull this up on the site, by the way? I just get back to this after I do Simone. Let's do that, because I think people need to see this. It's hugsfromholly.com. And, let's do that, because I think this would be better than me just reading off of it. Hugsfromholly.com. Take a break. On the other side, Jordan Simone going to the Seahawks, his road, his journey. We'll get into that with one of the more popular players on the college football scene here over the last decade, Jordan Simone from ASU. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Outside of the Cardinals and their draft and Zane Gonzalez being selected, the story that really resonated with fans, and yesterday I had a bunch of people said, Jordan Simone, I thought he was done. And they had heard that he was going back and making his run into football with the Seattle Seahawks. And I told Eric, I said, we got to go find him. So here now is Jordan Simone joining us live, former Sun Devil, Skyline safety back in the day. And he's going up to Seattle. As a free agent. No, so how did this happen? Congratulations, first of all, but how did this all happen?
Well, yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. Kind of been a crazy journey for this past year, just with all the injuries and kind of not knowing if I wanted to play or not. And just really having to look in the mirror and figure out, who are you? What do you want to do? How do you want to be remembered? And it just ultimately came down to that I still feel like I can play. I feel like I could play in the league, and I always have. And that's just ultimately what made me want to come back and keep playing.
Okay, so take me back to when you hurt your knee initially, just to give the fans the idea of how severe was that injury?
Yeah, so I tore my ACL with 3 games left in my senior year at ASU, and then I was rehabbing, training for 8 months straight, and was just running straight forward, just like a little 10-yard get-off, and I'd just been cleared to do like I'd been cleared like 2 months before that to run straight forward, and then I'd just been cleared to start cutting, so I was just bursted out straight forward, and once I crossed 10 yards, I heard a pop, and I fractured my kneecap. So it was like, oh, geez, I got to start all over again. And pretty much, I kind of hit my rock bottom, I guess you could say, with the injury. I was like, I'd just been working so hard to get back, and then fractured my kneecap and was like, oh, shoot, I got to start all back over. And I didn't know if I wanted to play or keep trying to play, and I ended up getting a job this season in medical sales, which was a job that was helped out with by the doctor who did my ACL surgery, Dr. Chabra. So kind of went through all that and didn't know if I wanted to keep playing. I had a really good job and was like, you know what, man, I got to try to play.
Yeah.
I didn't feel right inside, not at least giving it a shot. And I'm so glad that I decided to play again, because I got this huge opportunity now with the Seahawks, my hometown. So just really, really blessed and excited to get going.
We're talking about Jordan Simone and undrafted, going to Seattle with the Seahawks. Okay, what were you selling? What medical device?
I was in orthopedic medical sales. So like anything from ACL surgeries to, shoulder rotator cuff repairs. I was doing all that. So I had to learn all the anatomy of everything. And I worked at for Desert Mountain Medical. We were a distributor of Arthrex medical parts. So it was cool, though. It was definitely a crazy experience and new. And luckily, those guys were really cool with me, wanting to pursue my dream.
Did anybody recognize you when you went out on a call? Like, I watched you play at ASU.
Happened? When they see my name, yeah, they would recognize it, some of them, some of the docs that were sports fans.
Yeah.
It was fun, though.
When you bottomed out, who'd you go to? Who talked you off the ledge?
I got a great support system of family and friends, and Mike Bercovici, obviously, is like my very best friend, was always there for me at any time, and was always looking out for me. But my parents were always there saying, you got to try to play, buddy. You're going to regret it if you don't. And I'm so glad that I am, because just such an amazing experience. I had a great support system with my family and friends. So.
When did you believe that you could get to the league? There had to have been that moment of, okay, you get hurt, you bottom out, you got to pull yourself up off the mat, you got to go back and sit. I've had 4 ACLs. My wife's had multiple knee replacements. So, yeah, I mean, we know the drill. So
yeah.
I've sat on the edge of tables. I've had a donor graft. I've had all that nonsense. So when you're sitting there on a table and you're pumping away and you just want to cry because a good therapist makes you cry. A little bit of advice to everybody. I think I'm sure you'd agree with this, Jordan. Anytime you guys have knees being done and you're not crying during rehab, go get a different therapist in all likelihood. You got to cry.
Yeah.
Got to get that quad to fire. So when did you know that you would – it's like, you know what? I've bottomed out. Now I'm coming back up. When did that hit? Was it December? Was it last spring? When was it?
I would say after I broke my kneecap, I was like – just really upset, just because I'd worked so hard to get back, and I was just in shock almost, just to injure my knee again. And
you were done. You were done then, right? You were done at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I've never been done. I've never been like I'm done, but I've been really upset and thought that it might, this injury might take me out of the game I love. So, And no one wants to go out like that. Everyone wants to go out on their own terms. So, I mean, this whole process has been such a blessing, though. Just, I think in life, and many people can agree with this, is like when you get kicked to the dirt and you stand up, you feel like you stand 10 feet higher just because of what you went through. Mm-hmm. And I definitely feel like that. These injuries have helped me mature as a man. And I feel like every day is a blessing just to be able to work out and get in shape and to have an opportunity to play, to keep playing this game after being in the real world, especially. I would love to play football for the rest of my life.
Sure. Sure.
But I'm just really happy and excited for an opportunity.
Okay. How did Seattle come about? What was the connection with the Seahawks, and were there other options that you had?
I have a really good agent that will get me, you know, tryouts if need be. But I had kind of talked with the Seahawks scout last year. They bring everybody back for hometown. You know, the guys that are from a certain area, they bring it back. Like if you're from Arizona and you play on the East Coast, they'll bring you back for like a pro day.
Right.
And so I had went there when I was hurt. They still were like, hey, you can come if you want. And so I ended up going out there and I met all the coaches and scouts, and I saw the scout at ASU's pro day. I went to watch and ended up chatting with him for like 45 minutes just about what I'm doing and where my head is at. And he was like, all right, well, you know, maybe we can get you out to mini camp. And then ended up texting me the next day and was like, hey, we definitely want to bring you into mini camp and we'll let you know for sure later. And then I ended up getting that call after the draft saying, you know, hey, you ready to go for mini camp?
Yeah. So, and mini camp is next week.
Yep.
Okay.
Next weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So
it's awesome.
Well, yeah.
Well, good luck to you. And, what a great story, and we'll keep our eyes on you and appreciate the time and best of luck.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you calling.
You got it. There's Jordan Simone with us. Good stuff. Appreciate his time. That's great. All right. From that, I'm going to delicately go over to this. Do we have that site now, Eric? So this is Todd Heap. And this is the Hugs from Holly site. And, I mean, it just breaks your heart. And tomorrow would have been her birthday. And they're going to honor and celebrate hashtag Hugs from Holly Day, because Holly was known to give the best hugs. And her love from everyone and everything in life was contagious. So they're going to spread the joy, scatter sunshine in Holly's honor on her birthday. There's ways that you can get involved, as simply as wear pink in Holly's honor. So, yeah, I'm going to wear pink tomorrow. Make a plan to share hugs, spread love and joy. Capture your family spreading joy, post pictures and all that. And you can make a donation to this at the very, very bottom. And that's just, go back to the top if you could, Eric. Just scroll back up to the top there. I mean, you just look at that, those two pictures and just, oh, gosh. So I'm going to leave you with that today. And for you to consider that, just check it out. Because I know there's a lot of you that said, you know, what can we do about this? Or you're concerned about Todd Heap, and that's something else. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. Eric produces, as always. Thanks for being with us.